Hello, everybody. My name's Izzy Grossoff, and this is the Some Gender Going On podcast. This is the very first episode I'm recording. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how I like doing it. We'll see if there are more. So today, what I want to talk with you all about is gender as something that arises out of community and out of culture, not out of science or taxonomy or medicine or classification. Okay, so gender is something you do with people. So the community approach to gender is, who do I want to do gender with? Who am I going to hang out with? Who am I going to talk gender with? Who am I going to receive support from? Who am I going to give support to? Who am I uplifting? Who am I joining hands with? Who am I making friends with? Who am I building understanding with and for and from? This is in contrast to what I call the classification approach to gender, which I think of as sort of the default and standard approach in our society, which is to say, you know, the American tradition, the European tradition, the sort of medicalized tradition of transgender mindsets. So this is the question, what gender do I have? What category, as defined by neutral, disinterested experts, do I most accurately fall into? And once I'm classified into that category, do I live up to the expectations of that category as judged, again, by neutral, external, non-trans deciders? So this is the mindset that was very much the default until quite recently, and is still, unless you find the right sort of space, the way things are done in a lot of places. Now, personally, I prefer community. One vision of what this can look like is the first gender clinic I went to when I was starting hormone replacement therapy. This is a place called Central Outreach in Pittsburgh. It is for queer folks to access medicine without being gate, without needing an insurance system, without needing access to the sort of institutionalized practices of medicine. So the rule there was you don't need to make appointments ahead of time, you just show up. There's no copay, there's no insurance requirement, nothing's going to be reported to anybody. If you have insurance, you can use it, and that'll help make the money go farther for other people, but also you don't need to. It'll always be available. And there are always new people getting trained, whether as, you know, phlebotomists, the blood draw people, as maybe new nurses, new whatever. It was a very community-centered place, and a huge fraction of the people who worked there were queer, were trans, and so forth. And it was very plugged into the community. This was the place that said, you know, what do my people need? What do our people need? And that's what I'm going to help people with. It was started to help distribute PrEP to lessen the rate of HIV spreading, and then expanded from there into a number of LGBT-focused medical practices. At the opposite extreme of these two approaches, where that's a very community-oriented approach, there's also a very classification-oriented approach, such as some of the early, like, 70s and 80s era trans medicine, where they had things like the real-life test, where you had to, in order to qualify to be trans, to be sufficiently trans to receive medical treatment, you had to live as your true gender with no medical support for a long period of time in a very transphobic environment, as was the case in those days. And if you did that well enough, as judged by a whole team of non-trans medical experts, then you qualified, you were trans enough. So it's this very sort of, you're put in a box, there's a specific vision of what transness should look like, a box you have no control over that somebody else decides for you. And then, once they've designed that box, they decide whether you fit in it good enough. So, I prefer community. I think this classification approach is sterile and clinical and medical and disempowering. It tells us that we're not the authority on our own experience, that we're not the determiners of our fate. It's not rich or alive or joyous. It doesn't bring people together. This is not the kind of transness I want to live in. It's not the kind of transness I want to support. I might engage with it if I have to for certain purposes, but ideally I'll engage with it with my community to help them get through this rather than looking to this classificatory approach as my source of self-understanding and validation. This isn't... If there is a way to do classification joyously, that's as a fun side project, not as this, we're going to determine the one truth, the truth for all time. And that's really the approach that I disagree with. This idea of there being a fundamental truth behind transness that doesn't interact with or consider the experiences of the people who are actually trans. Something that's diagnosed from the outside rather than experienced from the inside. Classification that seeks the one truth is destructive to every other way that a person might understand themselves, and I can't stand that. In contrast, community is built by us. We collectively decide what this experience means to us. No one can diminish us or restrict us. We define ourselves. And when I say community, you know, that might mean community in person. It might mean going to a meetup group. It might mean, you know, your neighborhood queer hangout spot with your three trans friends who you meet up there on every week. It might be an internet space, right? It might be an affirming Discord or a subreddit or some more niche forum or a social media subcommunity or a fan fiction writing group or any number of places. Community is about... It's something that's made by and controlled by and in support of the people with the experience. Now, one way to see this contrast is between the community approach and the classificatory approach is how they engage with labels. In the community approach, labels are secondary to community. Once a group exists, the group might give a name to itself, might give names to its experiences and beliefs and patterns. And those labels mean what the people in that group, what the group as a whole, wants the labels to mean. They don't have some, you know, fundamental connection to a deep underlying truth. This is how we think about ourselves. In contrast, in the classification approach, labels are all there is. And the goal of a label is to be true. The true classification matters, and it is treated as desperately important in this mindset. And it's something that applies to everybody, no matter how much or how little they want that classification for themselves. It's the difference between a label like a name tag with little hearts drawn in it, something creative and expressive and self-determined. That's how I make name tags whenever I go somewhere. It's a way for me to show myself. Versus a label like a butterfly pinned to a tray and slotted into a drawer. The sort of place where creativity and beauty and independence go to die, to be compressed into a rigid and diagnosed and unchanging structure. And I don't want that at all. I don't want that for anybody. Now, I want to clarify something here. I'm not trying to reject all scientific practice, all scientific exploration of questions, and trying to seek some underlying nature of reality. I am a scientist. I love seeking the underlying nature of reality. I do think that a technical and biological and chemical perspective on gender and on being trans and all these things can be beneficial, but I'm trying to contest who should be the final authority on matters of who is trans, what does it mean to be trans, what does it look like to be trans, what does a good outcome look like, what does support and safety and joy look like. You know, should you trust the collective wisdom of a community of people with experiences like yours, or the standardized textbook understanding of a professional expert with years of training on a variety of subjects that loosely overlap with what you care about? In my opinion, you're better off listening to community practices as informed by the scientific literature, rather than the standardized medical practice, especially when that medical practice is uninformed by community experiences, as was the case everywhere until quite recently in the American and European medical tradition, and even to this day in many other places, and some subsets of that tradition. What I'm saying is, if you're a science-minded trans person, or just someone who's got some gender going on, you want to learn about trans stuff, you're better off reading the Dysphoria Bible at dysphoria.fyi, or read transfemscience.org, rather than the DSM-5 or the ICD-10. Join some subreddits and Discord servers, make a Mastodon account, go to a meetup group. Don't just talk to your doctor. And that doesn't mean stop doing the science. It means the people I trust to interpret the science aren't the doctors. But I still want the science being done. Now, what does a community-first experience of gender and transness look like? It means we base our validation, our joy, our sense of self, how we understand ourselves, on the perspectives of our community, on acceptance and support from our community, and from those with experiences like our own, from those who we see ourselves reflected within. And we base our validation and our joy on ourselves and who we know ourselves to be. And perhaps most importantly, we give that joy and we give that validation and we give that support freely to all those who come seeking it. We're not going to close ourselves off and say, you're not right, just because we need to see people who are coming to us and say, I want to learn about your experience. I want to support your experience. And I want to make sure you know that we love you, we support you, and we're here for you. And that's what I'm telling you, by the way. If you're trans, I want to form community with you. I want us to be part of a shared wisdom, a shared support, a shared friendship, and a shared love. In particular, that means we're going to reject any outside force or system or group of having the authority to decide whether we're worthy. There's no gods and no doctors and no psychiatrists that can tell me whether I'm trans enough. And none of them can tell you whether you're trans enough either. And if there's allies or co-conspirators who will join us in our community, in support of our community, well, they're welcome, but they're not foundational to the existence of a group like that, of a community like that. There have been many communities of this mindset in many places and many times. I've heard, though I can't verify myself, that the travesti community of Latin America is a good example. I'd point people to Jules Gil Peterson's book, A Short History of Transmisogyny, for more info, or to the Stained Glass Woman Substack review of that book called A Love Letter to the Dolls. It's a view of a loudly feminine, unashamed, unassimilationist trans femme community specific to a place and a language and a tradition. And though I'm not an expert on history, I have heard there were a lot of gender diverse communities in a lot of places in the world that got erased and stamped out and discredited and destroyed by the colonialist, strict gender binary enforcing mindset of to be civilized is to separate manhood and womanhood and have no space for gender diversity or transness or anything. And anybody who doesn't conform to that is barbaric and savage and uncivilized and deserves everything that the colonialists are doing to them. I think that a lot of joyous trans community met their end in that phase. I haven't done the research to determine directly to what extent that's happened. I know some communities that have survived that, but I'm sure there are a lot more that didn't. So that tells us, those of us like me who don't have a community fully established anymore, well, we're going to need to create that again. It's something we're going to need to seek in the future. Just because our history isn't fully formed doesn't mean we can't make something better in the future. Another example, maybe a little more specific, a little more personal, I want to talk about, is about oral and sublingual estradiol. As a dichotomy of classificatory versus community approaches to things. These are two different ways to take the most fundamental HRT drug for trans femme people. So it's the same pill. It's small and oval and blue, called estradiol. It's just two different ways of getting it into your system. Oral means you swallow the pill, right? It goes in your stomach, you digest it, goes through your liver, gets in your bloodstream. This is standardized. It's parallel to how people take most other drugs. It's easier to measure via blood tests and so forth, and it's easier to implement. The doctor doesn't have to put much trust in the patient to be doing stuff right. They can just be like, swallow this. It's fine. It goes hand in hand with a slow, cautious ramp up, because of course one does a slow, cautious ramp up. Every sensible doctor would always do a slow, cautious ramp up with every drug, out of fear of side effects, of course. In contrast, sublingual estradiol is a higher dose per pill. It takes, a bit more precision to measure the effects. You got to record and be intentional with what timing you take the blood at, because sublingual estradiol is about dissolving the pill under your tongue and it going directly into your bloodstream from there, or at least some fraction of the pill going directly into your bloodstream from there. Some of it definitely ends up in your saliva and swallowed and through the same route as the rest. But, it's the percentages that matter here. Now, because more of the drug bypasses one's liver, this approach actually has lower side effects. But because it feels less cautious, less controlled, it can feel to a medical establishment as more risky, even if in practice it's less risky. Now, it takes more effort to implement, but it's generally considered in the community, in people I've talked to, in, online spaces where I did my research, as a better approach. And this is people talking from experience, maybe who've tried both, who've seen people tried both, rather than people talking from a scientific background where there is, evidence to back up what I've been talking about here, but there's not a standardized consensus that it's better because it just hasn't been tested enough because everything's so new. How would it be tested enough? And it certainly hasn't reached the medical standardization process because, of course, it hasn't. So, who are you going to believe? Are you going to believe the medical textbook? Or are you going to believe some folks you met on the internet? In my opinion, you're better off trusting some folks you met on the internet when you're in community with them and not with those medical experts. Now, some doctors will let you pick whatever you like. Oral, sublingual, knock yourself out. Whatever you like. Of course, they're not going to adjust their blood testing practices if you are taking sublingual, which means their blood tests will be next to useless. It would be nice if they actually incorporated that into their practices, but it's better than dictating it for you. Some doctors tell you oral only because they've never heard of sublingual, and if it wasn't mentioned in their training, then it must be a bad idea. I don't know anybody who recommends sublingual. But I read a story once, and in this story was depicted a big community of trans women The whole community existed as sort of a self-sustaining organization. It was outside of proximity to the standardized establishment. And of course, they all took their E-pills sublingually. How could it have been there any other way? You know, once you eject this standardized mindset and you move to a community-first mindset, of course. So that's a community-first experience. But, you know, this history and the vision of a possible future of gender understanding and wisdom driven by community gets me thinking, what does my community look like? What would my community consist of? Well, it's not fully formed. I don't think there's been the time for, you know, proper community organization and solidification to happen in this case. But to me, where I feel community is very, what's often called like very online trans spaces. Okay, so this is the sort of places where terms like programmer socks come from. That is to say, stripy thigh-high socks, popular in the trans community, and especially the trans community where people program a lot. Maybe people in this community are going to wear little cat ears on their headphones. Maybe they're going to talk about dysphoria hoodies and having to boy mode and making trans-affirming meme formats. There's going to be a lot of neurodiversity, like autism and ADHD. There's going to be a lot of sapphic people rather than a very straight-oriented trans space. There's going to be a lot of poly people, and polyness is going to be normalized and part of the community mindset, even if it's by no means a requirement. There's a lot of therian or furry or people who might describe themselves as not a person vibes going on. There's a lot of techiness, especially in an open source way, a lot of sex positivity, sex work positivity, a lot of left vibes, a lot of anarchic vibes. You know, this is all a vision of what a community can look like, right? And maybe, you know, this is partially me coming from a place of, I started exploring my gender during COVID. I started exploring my, well, that's not true. I started exploring my gender long before COVID. Shortly after hatching, COVID hit. And so I was exploring as a hatched person, conscious of my identity and looking for support of it in online spaces very heavily in those early days. And so I have a lot of affinity for it, and I think it is sort of a natural home for me. Maybe a bit more personal, but I'd love to find people who like waxing philosophic about gender, non-binariness, what a future of diverse understandings and diverse mindsets can look like. There's a reason I'm doing a podcast. For a lot of people, including me, finding community for the first time is intimately connected with discovering oneself. Meeting my first non-binary people who I was in community with, who I could interact with directly and see as real people that I could be like, was very directly connected to me hatching, to me understanding that I could be non-binary and that I am non-binary and I want to be non-binary. And meeting my first non-binary person who was taking HRT at a community level, who I could see as, this is a real person, a person I can be like, a person I can see myself in, was very connected to me starting HRT, and more specifically, very connected to me seriously exploring the possibility, which ultimately led to me starting it. One way I've heard this put that I think is really poignant is a line from a recent episode of the podcast House of Decline, where the podcaster was coming out as trans, and she said, you know, I just want to be girls with somebody. Right? It's not that I want to be a girl. I want to be girls with somebody. Right? I want to be in that community as myself, with people like me. That's really the dream and the magic. Now, next thing I want to talk about is a plurality of communities. So, I don't think the mindset we should have is there's one big trans community and everybody's in it and everybody's happy. Okay, because this is getting back to that classificatory mindset, right? Because if everybody is in the same community, the same mindset, we're getting back to that there is one truth, there's one way to be trans mindset again. And that's, I don't think that's ever going to work for everybody. Instead, I want a plurality of communities. Everybody can have different ways they do things, different ways they understand themselves, all mutualistic, all coexisting, and all validating one each other, all validating one another, saying, you know, you understand yourself the way you understand yourself, and that's good. And it's not how I understand myself, and it doesn't need to be, because nobody has a monopoly on truth. Now, I want to give some examples of places where in the past, or even in the present, there's people trying to say, oh, that's not the right way to be trans. You're not doing it properly. I want to push back against that and say, this is what community can look like, what community does look like, and we shouldn't be trying to restrict that or say, you're wrong. We should just be trying to say, you're right for you, and I'm going to be right for me. And I'm going to find the people who share my view, and you've found the people who share yours. And that's good for both of us. So one community I want to talk about is the MOGAI community. M-O-G-A-I, standing for Marginalized Orientations, Gender Alignments, and Intersex. This was a sort of community, very internet-focused, maybe about 10 years ago, that published big lists of gender terms, of orientation terms, making lots of pride flags, especially for very niche identities that might only vibe with a small fraction of people who engage with them, maybe coming up with lots of neopronouns. There's more emphasis on gender diversity as compared to a lot of other trans spaces at the time that were more emphasizing a specific sort of trans men and trans women, a sort of binary model of transition. Now, this MOGAI space was maybe centered on Tumblr, a lot of teenagers, terms started maybe 2013 and 2014. This community was certainly going before that, but this is when it sort of reached heyday. And they received a lot of pushback from people with the mindset of, you know, oh, you're making us look unserious. You're making trans people look silly. You don't even want medical transition. You can't be really trans. This sort of trans medicalist binary first crowd. The group that got labeled initially pejoratively as true scum and then reclaimed that label and started using it for themselves. I don't know to what extent it's still thought of as a slur. So I'm going to just call them trans medicalists right now. So a lot of modern genderqueer and non-binary terminology draws heritage from those days, even as a lot of the other terms that were made up in those days have fallen by the wayside. In my opinion, communities are good. Communities are great. Join what you like and let live and go in peace if you don't like it. Don't feel the need to approach the truth. Don't worry about, oh, they're going to make us look bad. Listen, if the phobic people want to be phobic, they will find a reason to be phobic. The presence of a community that you're not in, doing things in a way you don't like, will never affect that. Fundamentally, what's going on is that when people shut down communities like that, they're doing it because they're not comfortable with that mindset. They don't want people to be talking like that. They have their truth and they feel threatened by other people taking things in their own direction. And then they're using it as an excuse. Oh, well, it's not that I want to shut you down. It's that those scary transphobes over there might shut us down if I don't get rid of you first. So I don't vibe with that mindset at all, as you can probably tell. my opinion, you know, as I said, don't feel the need to approach the truth. You know, let people go in peace. Don't be, you know, exclusionary trans medicalist. Don't smear people as trans trenders, which was the insult by the exclusionary trans medicalist folks against the gender expansive trans mogi, etc. type folks. Even if someone's gender experience is unfathomable to you, well, let them go in peace. They found what description works for them, and that's what matters. Now, this whole sequence was easy for me to talk about. Okay? It's easy for me to criticize exclusionary trans medicalists and stand with the Mogiers. Because if I'd been better at finding the supportive parts of the internet when I was a teenager, maybe I'd have been in that community, the Mogi community, during its heyday. I think I would have liked it. So let's talk about a group I don't identify with, the transsexual community. Now, I'm not talking about the use of the term by people who don't identify with it, which certainly continues to exist. I'm talking about people who identify as transsexual. These folks are drawing heritage from a time when the word transsexual was in more popular use, and the terms transsexual and transgender to them mean different things. The way these people use the term, transsexual is an identity which puts the focus on one's sex as the thing being transed. So it's about changing your hormones, your organs, or the intention to do so in the future. These are the central elements of one's identity in this community. And the way this community uses the word transgender, it's more about people who trans their identity or their social positioning, rather without necessarily transing their sex. And to clarify, people in this community are overwhelmingly likely to describe themselves as transsexual. People don't adopt this terminology and then call themselves transgender, unless, you know, it's a holdover from a long time ago. But that being said, the heyday of this mindset was 15 plus years ago. Works like Julia Serrano's Whipping Girl and Lynn Conway's homepage sort of preserve that era of that mindset and that community. But that doesn't mean that's not to say that this isn't an identity that works for people now or that it isn't a community that still exists. Now, I want to make clear that the focus on sex as the thing being trans is in heavy contrast to most trans people, at least who I see a lot of, who are outside this community, who mostly think of transsexual as a synonym for transgender, albeit an outdated and archaic synonym. And possibly an offensive one, because in some cases, it was used to invalidate people who were transgender people, that is, people who think of themselves as trans, who were not interested in medical transitioning. But it doesn't have to be done in an invalidating sort of way. You know, people who identify with this positioning, who think of themselves as transgender, are often trans elders. They're people who hatched 15 plus years ago, who lived through this whole sequence, and they've maintained that community and that mindset the entire time. They're speaking about what feels real to them and what feels real to their experience. And I can distinctly tell that this mindset, this community, isn't right for me. Sure, I'm taking HRT, but I don't have any plans to do any other bodily modifications, and I'm not interested in any other body modifications. In fact, for me to be comfortable taking HRT as well, I had to first reach the point of self-acceptance and self-realization that I am non-binary, that my non-binariness is central and real and irrespective of any particular body I might have, and that there's no right hormonal system for me. It's just a choice, and I can choose whatever I want. And so I did. I chose an E-dominant hormonal system rather than a T-dominant hormonal system. That was my choice. So I'm not transsexual. I'm not in that community. The pathway of body modification, of transing my sex, is not core to my identity. it's not central to my sense of self. If anything, to the extent that I am transing my sex, it's explicitly peripheral, and I need it to be. But I'm not going to sit here and deny that that identity, that mindset, that community is beneficial to people who find it validating and sustaining and a source of comfort and community and shared wisdom and understanding in their community. I don't have a monopoly on the truth. I'm not out here trying to say what was right for me is the only thing that can ever be right for anybody. I've heard people describe that to them, identity and social positioning and the other non-medical aspects of transness feel flimsy and tenuous as something to base a sense of self off of for them. And that body modifications, things like HRT and facial feminization surgery and top surgery and bottom surgery, feel more solid and permanent and capable of building an identity and a life upon. And you know what? More power to them. It's never going to work for me. That's not at all what I want to base my sense of identity and my life on. But I'm glad they've found something that works for them. I'm happy that community exists and that it uplifts the people who join it in on it. I support their finding the wisdom that works for them. And you know what? I'm happy I'm not in that community and that I can find my community elsewhere that works for me. It's a beautiful thing when you think about it. They found what works for them. I found what works for me. And none of us are going to sit here and invalidate each other. So, to wrap up, I see a future where we seek community, not the truth. Where we find whatever number of communities work for us, rather than being classified into at most one little box that we struggle to live up to, and we're determined by outside forces whether we're good enough. Where all of our communities can come together to push for common goals, no matter how we see ourselves, and no matter how we find fulfillment and support and love. And at the end of the day, that's the dream I have. I want people to find support, people to find friendship, people to find love, and people to find togetherness. And I think that's something we can easily be lacking, but I think there's every opportunity for a better future. Thanks for listening. If this episode spoke to you, maybe tell a friend about this podcast. Maybe read some of my blog posts. Consider getting in touch. My name is Izzy Grossoff. You can search for me. There's only one of me. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it.